Hi, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Bass.
And welcome to Deciding Set, where we're here to talk about all things tennis. So we've got a really exciting show lined up for you today. Thanks for joining us. We just want to talk about, obviously, the US Open kicking off today. I'm sure a lot of you are going to be looking forward to it. Just a few talking points around that. Vass, and what in particular are you looking forward to this year's tournament?
Oh, I'm just so glad to be seeing tennis live on TV with all these spectators. Obviously, it would be great if Djokovic is able to do the calendar Grand Slam. I mean, certainly it hasn't happened in our lifetime.
Absolutely, no. I mean, it's just something that the thought of it in the last few years, when we've had three of the greatest players of all time in Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, and these three have just been breaking records that a lot of us thought would never, ever get broken. And then to think that at the age of 34, he's won the first three slams of the year. And as you say, it's not happened since 1969 when Rod Laver did it. And, you know, no one's won the first three slams of the year. So it's doubly historic because we could be looking at someone winning the Grand Slam after 50-odd years and also breaking the Grand Slam record going from 20 to 21 in the year 2021.
Yeah, I saw that in the video that the US Open had released. And for him as well, it'd be great because he's actually held them all briefly, hasn't he? And now, if he does this. But yeah, I mean, apart from that, obviously, there's just generally watching so many different possibilities of a new Grand Slam champion, maybe in the women's draw, so many different matches going on at different times. And I mean, both the men's draw and the women's draw have got quite a lot of variability. There are a lot of potential upsets. Even day one, we've been seeing quite a few matches going really tight. So I'm just looking forward to a really good quality level of tennis, really.
Absolutely, I agree with you. I mean, it's so nice just to be able to watch tennis again. We saw it at Wimbledon, seeing the full crowds again. It's just something that we've really missed in tennis. Don't get me wrong, last year, I think sort of expectations have changed, haven't they? Last year, we were just happy to have live tennis again after thinking that we wouldn't maybe get a US Open, we didn't get a Wimbledon. So even though there was no crowds, we had to almost just grin and bear it. But I think it's so nice this year to see packed stadiums, people enjoying themselves, and the players seem to be really happy as well. So that's good. Just on Djokovic, I think we can't, you know, you got the feeling in that. I did see that video that you mentioned, Vass, the promotion video, and I kind of felt that they were really hoping that Federer and Nadal would be there as well to have to have all three going for 21. But you know, it's not to be. And just a word on those two as well. I mean, you know, their longevity has been brilliant. I mean, Federer, I think it's the first time. Well, he's missed a couple, but it's the first time that Federer and Nadal and Serena Williams have all missed a Grand Slam since 1997. So when you have to almost put it into that kind of context to realise how big an achievement it is. That being said, great a players as Federer and Nadal are, I don't know what your thoughts are, but in my honest opinion, as much as I think Djokovic is the favourite, and we'll come to that in a little bit, I don't think that those two not being there, as much as it's a big shame for the tournament, it's a shame for all of us, you know, you want to see the greatest, but I don't think it affects Djokovic's chances. I think it's going to be tricky regardless. You've got guys like Medvedev, who I'd say is, you know, on current form, a better hardcore player than Federer and Nadal. You've got Zverev, who's just won the Olympics, won Cincinnati. So I would say they're probably bigger threats to him than Federer and Nadal are right now. Federer's not beaten Djokovic in a Grand Slam since 2012. Nadal's not beaten him for 8 years on a hard court. So I don't think it changes much in terms of the challenge that Djokovic faces. But what do you feel?
No, I agree. It probably doesn't in terms of the outcome. Of course, the beautiful quality of tennis that, you know, so many fans all around the world, we all maybe have our preferences of being a Nadal fan or a Fed fan, or, you know, obviously just watching really, really good tennis as well. I'm really enjoying watching Medvedev's game and seeing Zverev sort of coming into some form again, and, you know, with the Olympics win and, you know, some other interesting front runners. I mean, currently we're just watching Auger Alassim in the background. And he's got Tony Nadal as a coach now, isn't he? Which is probably the debut in terms of in a Grand Slam. So it'll be interesting to see if he manages to do something. Shapovalov looks like a good prospect, although I think he's having a bit of an emotional low after Wimbledon, but I really hope that he bounces back because he's got a beautiful game on him. You know, for me, I suppose I'm also looking at the women's side and thinking there really is a lot of good talent out there. Perhaps I would say actually Serena not being in it, although maybe it's not been the same since after her pregnancy. And also the enormity of you know, beating the record. And, you know, that hopefully she is able to come back and we're able to see her play. But it's really exciting to see all these, you know, great young players and see if there is perhaps a new champion. I don't know what you think about that.
No, I completely agree. I think, you know, maybe for Serena, as you say, for the last few years, it's been tricky, you know, she's come to a few finals, so she's been there or thereabouts, but as far as winning it, but definitely it does feel like a, not a changing of a guard as such, but it feels like a new era. You know, she's been, but it's been very much until Osaka and then Barty have sort of been doing what they've been doing, really, especially Barty, you know, winning Wimbledon this year, winning Cincinnati, Osaka won the US last year, then Australian. It's kind of felt like women's tennis has been a little bit up for grabs, if you like. There have been a lot of players who could on their day win, but that's what I'm excited about. I'm excited to see, is Barty going to almost cement herself as the best player in the world? Is Osaka going to come back and say, actually, no, I'm the best hardcourt player? Or will an Andreescu or someone else kind of really make their mark? So I think it's really well set up in that respect.
Absolutely. There's just so many people that could do it. And as I said, even on the men's side, going back to your original question, there's just so much talent out there. And it's really nice that actually we might be able to see and focus a bit more on those, because we are not necessarily having the luxury of seeing who we've seen playing all this while. I mean, it's outstanding that we're even talking about three individual tennis players having got to 20 Grand Slams in their lifetime each. I mean, it's astounding. It's unheard of. We were talking about this earlier, weren't we? Really, it was a big thing when Pete Sampras's record was broken. I don't think anyone thought that was going to be possible. So I'm just looking forward to that good level of tennis, really.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think as tennis fans and people who follow the game, we have to actually manage our expectations a bit. I mean, I heard someone at Wimbledon referring to Sampras's 14 Grand Slams as only 14 Grand Slams. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, you have to think after these three, Sampras comes next. So I think what's going to happen is, unfortunately, you know, in years to come, it is going to be hard for anyone to dominate, in my opinion. You're going to see people winning one slam and two slam. And unfortunately, nothing's ever going to be comparable to 20-odd slams. But I think it's just a freakish thing that's happened over the last 15 years, which we've got to be very grateful we've been able to witness. But I think, yeah, it's exciting to look ahead to what's next. I also love Shapovalov's game. I love the way he plays. He's very exciting to watch. It's difficult because a lot of people were worried for him when he was quite emotional when he lost to Novak in that semi-final. And he played a brilliant match. I mean, straight sets didn't really do him justice. Novak said he was probably the worst player for a lot of that match. And just it was purely Novak's belief, his mental strength, and maybe Shapovalov not quite believing on the big points. But there was nothing in that match. But he was quite emotional, and a lot of people felt that's bad. I didn't think it was bad. I think it showed how much it meant to him. But clearly there's been a bit of a lull, a bit of a dip since then. He hasn't won a match since Wimbledon. So I just feel like he needs to get through his first match or two here, and then maybe he can go on a bit of a run. So that it'll be nice to see him kind of back up what he did at Wimbledon and do it again here.
Absolutely, I agree. I mean, I think for me, the US Open is also more exciting because it's the last of the four Grand Slams this year. And what a contrast. I mean, look at how we started this year with the Australian Open. And just, you know, if you look from what happened there, and then there were the bushfires at the beginning, weren't there?
That was last year.
Oh, it was last year. Sorry.
No, but it's
I'm losing track.
No.
It seems like everything's the same,
absolutely,
really. I'm sure everyone, our listeners probably feel exactly the same. But even if you take that out, sorry, I clearly mixed that up. But the Australian Open at the beginning of the year, seeing what's happened and seeing the journey of having some fans present, then not there, then in one week, out the other week, COVID restrictions, travel restrictions, team restrictions, who you can come along with. You know, it's been really, really quite a tough year for a lot of our a lot of the players. I mean, there have been so many injuries as well. There have been mental struggles. There have been you know, just adjusting to different time schedules. I mean, it's been a lot. So I think it'd be really interesting to see how the year finishes. And I really, really am looking forward to just seeing how truly resilient all of these players are, really.
No, absolutely agree. And it's quite funny, isn't it? You mentioned about Australia, how crowds were kind of in and out and they had curfews. France was a reduced crowd. Wimbledon, yes, we did kind of, you know, open it up, and especially towards the end of the tournament, they're allowing capacity. This is the first Grand Slam that from day one, the whole tournament is capacity. And to me, that's quite quite a big moment, actually, not just in tennis, but in terms of where we are in the world. Because when you think last year, there was talk the US Open wouldn't happen. It did, but behind closed doors. And it felt quite eerie, but it almost felt like a real reminder of where we are in the world. And now we see the first tournament, but almost the first normal tournament, if you like, in terms of the surroundings since, in terms of the fans and what's allowed. So it's almost like we've come full circle. So it's quite a poignant moment in a way. But yeah, just great to see the players back.
Yeah, just on that point, I mean, because now we're seeing full crowds. I mean, what do you think in terms of other players that you think maybe would have done better because of the lack of crowds? And I mean, I'm trying to think, there were one or two that seemed like they probably thrived a bit more in the earlier slams, but do you think there are some that will do much better for having a crowd as well?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because you always think of a crowd helping the more experienced or the higher ranked player. I mean, you just look at Arthur Ashe Stadium Court, the razzmatazz. I mean, I've been lucky enough to be there a few times and for night sessions, and it's electric, but it's also, you can imagine how it'd be so daunting for a lower ranked player stepping on that court against one of the bigger names in tennis. But it was very interesting at Wimbledon when Tiafoe was pulled off the upset against Tsitsipas in the first round, and he actually said that he honestly believed if they'd been behind closed doors or even on an outside court, if he'd had to play, he probably would have lost. The crowd actually gave him that energy to take it to another level. So
yeah, he was really playing into the crowd.
He was loving it. He was absolutely, he's great fun to watch. So
yeah.
I think he plays later on against Chris Eubanks, his friend. But yeah, I mean, I think players like him, Monfils is another one. Monfils, you know, his results have got a little bit better lately. You know, I think he's in a good place, but also seeing the crowds there.
Monfils's game is built for that, isn't it? With all the trick shots and, you know, all these athletic abilities, you want to have spectators there for that. It's true.
Absolutely. His whole persona, he's a showman, isn't he? He's just, you know, he's so good for the game. So that's just built around that. And I'd say Djokovic, for me, is one of the few people that I actually don't think it matters. I honestly was a little bit nervous. How would he get on? Because he brings so much energy. He loves to fight till the end. He'll play, you know, every point till it's over. But he brings the energy. It doesn't really matter if there's zero. And that's what you have to admire about this guy. He's won 20 Grand Slams. You know, he's done everything pretty much there is to do in the sport, but even if there's no one there, so I think crowd or no crowd, he'll be fine, you know. You look at someone like Nick Kyrgios, I think he struggled for a lot of the pandemic. He didn't really play, and there was a lot of speculation, a lot of that, yes, he was a bit concerned about travelling during the pandemic, but it was also because he didn't really want to play in front of empty stadiums. So, but to be honest, you look at his first round draw, he's got Batista Agut. I don't know about you. I'm not convinced he's going to come out that first round anyway. I think Agut's probably not a good matchup for him. Someone who's going to get a lot of balls back. Very solid player. I think they could go either way. I'd probably give Agut the slight edge there, though.
Yeah, I hope he's okay, because did he not have to pull out at the last minute in a recent tournament? Was it Cincinnati or Winston-Salem?
Yeah, and that was quite a questionable thing. That's a good point, actually. Yeah, he was supposed to play Andy Murray in the first round of Winston-Salem last week, and it was really bizarre. Like, minutes before the match took place, he pulled out, and he didn't come on the court. He just sort of announced it, and literally the crowd that were there didn't know what was going on because they were waiting for the match to start. And people on social media knew that the match was off before the crowd did. And in the end,
Andy Murray did, probably.
Yeah, so in the end, Noah Rubin, I think they asked three different people who had lost qualifying if they'd want to play, and none of them did because they just literally played. In the end, Noah Rubin, I think he went to university in that area, and he felt some sense of loyalty to the tournament.
He just come off the court 20
literally
minutes,
yeah, and the poor guy had 10 minutes to come, and he said he had nothing left. He literally, and I think, to be fair, Andy Murray acknowledged as well that he had nothing, you know, nothing left, but he saved the tournament, because they would have been absolutely in a pickle otherwise. What to do with the draw. So you look at stuff like that with Kyrgios, and then the way Kyrgios, in my opinion, the way Kyrgios made his comment and said, I'm playing the US Open, I'm not in a doubt, I've just done this. You know, he actually stood there with the you know, it might be a 250, maybe it's not a slam, but it's still an ATP tournament, which many, many players would give anything to be playing at that level. So I think you shouldn't be disrespecting the game either. But, you know, be that as it may, I'll give him a good chance. And just moving on, it's our first podcast of the tournament, first podcast. Obviously, a very exciting tournament. In terms of, you know, who you think's going to have a good run, who you think's going to win on both sides, any thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think, obviously, I'm hoping that Djokovic does manage to get the Grand Slam. So that's probably my prediction to win, but I think it'll be very, very close. Probably Medvedev, I suspect, will be in the final, but it obviously depends on a lot of things. I would love to see Shapovalov finding some form. So that's probably the person that, for me, I think will be making a great run. I'm obviously watching with a lot of interest what's going to happen with Auger Aliassime as well, because I do like his game quite a bit. I think that the Canadians at the moment are doing really well in general. So on the women's side, it would be great to see Bianca Andreescu coming back into some form. I mean, she's a former champion at the US Open, so for her, it'd be great to see that if she's recovered from her back problems. In terms of who I think is going to win with the women's, I think it's a much harder one to predict, really. I wonder if Barty's going to do it. I wonder if Osaka's going to do it. I really think it's quite hard to call, to be honest. Or who knows, it might become someone completely different. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, so with the men's, I mean, look, I'll be honest, I'd love to see Djokovic do it. I think he will. I think that actually the best thing he could have done, just another thing, no player has ever won the men's US Open and not played the Canadian Masters, which is either Toronto or Montreal and Cincinnati, since 1990, and that was Sampras when he won it as a 19-year-old. So normally you'd think, is that a sensible decision? I think it was. I think just given what he's going for, as I say, there's no guarantee that Novak Djokovic will ever be in this position again to win all four in the same year, because no one's been in this position since 1969. He's not been in this position his whole career. Federer, Nadal have never been in this position. Sampras never won a French Open. So these don't come along every day. The Olympics, yes, of course, it would have been great for him, great for his country to have won it. But it was always going to be a tough ask. You know, he'd hit a wall. Credit to Zverev. Zverev was fantastic. But Novak looked absolutely... he had nothing left. I think he needed that break. He needed that time with his family. I think he's going to be absolutely refreshed now to give this a full tilt. I can see a Djokovic-Medvedev final, because Medvedev's draw looks pretty favourable, having had a look at it. I don't see any real trouble for him. And I expect a tough final if that happens. If Djokovic gets past Zverev and faces Medvedev, I think it'll be really, really tough, because Australian Open this year... that was the final, and a lot of people were kind of calling Medvedev as a favourite, which I found a bit odd, seeing as Novak had won the Australian Open 8 times, and I love the way Medvedev plays, but he hasn't won a slam yet. And I said to you earlier, didn't I? I don't think anyone will be making Thiem a favourite at the French Open against Nadal, you know, even if he was like a form player on clay. So I think you have to respect Novak's record at the Australian. For some reason, though, Novak's made 8 finals at the US Open, but he's only won 3 of them. So I say only, he's won 3 US Opens, but by his phenomenal standards, he has lost in a few finals there, which there are a few reasons for it. I think it has been a bit windy. That was before the roof. There have been various things that have been tricky. But, you know, overall, 8 finals is fantastic. So I think, I just feel that if they came to the final, I would back Novak. I just feel that Medvedev's got a point to prove, A, from how poorly he played in the finals this year. Well, not poorly. I think Novak was just too good for him. But it was a really one-sided match that he was... you know, expected to do better. And 2 years ago, he came to the US Open final and he actually pushed Nadal really, really close. It was 5 sets. So I feel like he's going to have a point to prove. But I just think that if Novak plays to his game, I don't think anyone can stop him. Women's, I'm like you. I would love to see Andreescu get on a bit of a run, because the way she played 2 years ago, she looked awesome on hard courts. And she's just so unfortunate with injuries, because you kind of felt... that could have been almost a three-way rivalry with her, Barty and Osaka. So I'm not sure if she's going to be able to win it yet. You know, she's maybe a bit soon into the comeback, but just seeing her get on a run would be nice. For a winner, it's a tough one. I mean, a lot of people are saying Barty, and I know she won Cincinnati. I can't really call it, because to me, it doesn't feel like there's as well as Barty's played, I feel like if she wins this tournament, if she wins the US Open, then you can easily say she's the dominant player in slams, no doubt about that. But she's just won two slams a couple of years apart. It doesn't feel the same dominance as, say, Serena had or even Osaka had on a hard court. I would have actually made Osaka the favourite, to be honest, if it wasn't for...
I still would, though. I still think that...
No, I still think she's the favourite.
She's such a mental champion.
I still do. I would have made her even more of a favourite if it wasn't for what's been happening. If she overcomes the first couple of matches easily, I still think...
I actually think she's quite a resilient player. I just think that, as she said, perhaps knowing what she knows now, perhaps she'd have gone about it in a different way. But, you know, I wish her all the best of luck. If she was going through a difficult time, I hope that she's feeling much better, much stronger. I really think that it's quite nice for us, you know, watching and learning tennis and really enjoying the game, to just see how, like, they're like any other person, like you and me, and how, if she was going through these struggles that, you know, maybe still is, but how she can overcome it. I would love to see that. So,
yeah, I mean, I must admit, I'll be honest, I mean, not to get too diverted, from a pure tennis point of view, did I like some of the way she carried on with pulling out the press conference? No, I didn't. I didn't think it's good for the game. But be that as it may, I mean, mental health is a much bigger issue than what's right and wrong in the game. And, you know, I do have a lot of sympathy with what's come out after that. And yes, I did read her statement today. And actually, I must admit, I had a lot of respect for her after reading that statement, because she acknowledged that she hasn't done anything right. But she also acknowledged that she needs to actually be more proud of her achievements and actually embrace it more. And actually, when I read that statement, knowing what a great hardcourt player she is, that she won last year's US Open, this year's Australian, I'm more inclined to lean towards her, if anything. So I probably would go for her. In terms of men who I'd like to see having a run, or Shapovalov, for me, if he gets through the first couple of rounds, I could see Shapovalov doing well. And the guy I haven't mentioned that really impressed me was Sebastian Korda. I love the way that guy plays. I mean, he beat Dan Evans at Wimbledon, got to the fourth round. He's also got to the fourth round of the French Open. And I think quite a few of the Americans think that, although he doesn't really get hyped up as much as some of the others, he possibly could be their best chance of winning a slam in the next couple of years. And also Riley Opelka, really impressed.
I was just going to say, Riley Opelka is the other one. I was really impressed with him recently. It's such a shame he didn't manage to win the final. I think probably the momentousness of that daunted him. Was it Sinner?
That was Montreal. Yeah, he came to the finals against Medvedev, but had a great win there against Tsitsipas in the semis, which was a brilliant win for him. I think he beat Agut as well. So, and what could be encouraging there is that they reckon the conditions in Montreal and Cincinnati were really quick, but they're expecting it to play quick. So here at the US Open, if that's the case, he could be tough. One last thing, we've gone through predictions. Any sort of upsets you could see happening in the first week, or you want to sort of predict?
Well, I mean, I think the Sloane Stephens and Madison Keys match was something I didn't really predict happening. I mean, who knew that the final that happened a few years ago would be an opening match? And I had Keys down to win that. So, I mean, well done, fair play to Sloane Stephens. That's probably upset number one, but... I'm not sure. I'm sure there'll be one or two more. I probably have to study the draw in more details. I mean, there's just lots of strange matchups really at the moment. So, can you think of any off the top of your head?
I'm gonna make a really brave one, and it's probably gonna make myself look really, really silly. But I just have a feeling, well as Zverev's been playing, fantastic a player as he is, I just think Querrey's gonna do something tomorrow. I really do, because the way I'm looking at this, Sam Querrey is not the player he was 4 or 5 years ago when he was making the semi-finals of Wimbledon, when he beat Murray as defending champion, he's beaten Djokovic as defending champion. He, you know, he's had a lot of issues, Sam Querrey, but these courts are playing fast. Sam Querrey has got a big, big serve. All the pressure is on Zverev. People are talking about him as a potential champion here. He just won the Olympics. Full crowds. You know, he's going to have the crowd behind him. And the one other thing that I think we need to focus on is, great as Zverev played, and you mentioned this to me earlier before the podcast, and I think you're right. Last year's final, I just wonder how much that's going to be on Zverev's mind. You know, like, he was actually very... Everyone thought Zverev was going to win, but Zverev was two sets to love up. He served for the title at 5-3.
Yeah, I had Zverev down to win. I was convinced that
absolutely.
He would be the winner.
And he choked that final away. There's no other word to say it. And great as his form's been, just look at the Cincinnati final last week. Rublev, by his standards, didn't turn up. He played a poor final. But even a double breakup going for a straight sets win, Zverev threw in a very similar game to what he did in the final last year with a few double faults and he got broken. And it, had that been against a superior player? So, listen, I could be completely wrong. I mean, all the odds and most people would expect Zverev to take Querrey, but I just have a feeling if Querrey can get the first set and if he has a big serving day, I think that could be a little bit sticky.
Well, you've put it down here, so myself and I'm sure our listeners will hold you to that. I'd be really keen to see what you have to say. Please do put down in the comments who do you think will be doing a good run, who do you have down predicted to win, and what upsets do you think might happen? I'd be really interested to see, to be honest.
And one last thing, sorry, I know we covered Djokovic, but I think what helps him as well, although he's won the three slams, I think the only real pressure is from himself, because I was reading quite a lot of the experts. Do you know, not one expert is actually tipping him to win. They're all going with Zverev or Medvedev, which again, I find it's almost reminding me of the Australian Open this year. The guy who's got 20 slams, he's won all three this year. And they're mainly saying, because they're not sure he can, you know, they think the pressure is a lot with what he's going for. But I honestly think the more they want to make other guys the favourite, I actually think it helps Djokovic. I think if everyone made him the favourite, I think it would just add to what he's up against. Don't get me wrong, he was a huge favourite at Wimbledon, he managed it fine, I still think he'd be okay. I just think the magnitude of what he's going for two huge things. The all-time leading slam holder. If he doesn't do that, he could probably do that in Australia, but it's the all four in a year, which I think we might never see in our lifetime again. So I just think all the experts may be going with Zverev and Medvedev probably helped him.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's just, I mean, every time I think, how could someone possibly do that? He just seems to find an extra level, and I really admire that about him. But let's see. I think obviously I'm keen to see how the run goes, and it'd be really interesting to see how it goes on both ends. I mean, to your point, I think I was listening to Patrick McEnroe earlier, and he was saying about Pliskova, because Pliskova has come to a few finals, but unfortunately has not managed to convert, and I guess I would love to see if she's able to get a Grand Slam too, because her game is obviously good enough. It'd just be really interesting to see what happens.
Absolutely. And, and just a last thought, and we're obviously 2 weeks away, it's day one, but if Djokovic does go on to do this at the end of 2 weeks, how big in the terms of tennis history will that match semi-final with Nadal be? I mean, everyone had Nadal as a lock to win that. That would have been 21-18, and that is single-handedly kind of potentially turn tennis history. We'll wait and see. I mean, all to play for in 2 weeks. But it's been great. That's been us at deciding set. I've been Aaron.
I've been Vas, and it's been lovely to speak to you tonight. I hope you have a lovely evening.
And we look forward to hearing you all again soon.